Some residents of Lansing's Walnut neighborhood are irritated over the ongoing impasse with an important neighbor. A number of people living near NioWave, that's the high-tech particle acceleration company, have been waiting months to hear what the company makes of its requests to improve the area around a massive pole barn that went up last year. A number of residents feel the structure is a blot on the neighborhood. City Councilman Brian Jeffries and several of his colleagues share the neighborhood's exasperation. He's part of an effort to resolve the situation as well as prevent similar breakdowns in the future. Current State also welcomes Walnut neighborhood resident Mary Elaine Keener for an update. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us, Mark.
And we regret that NioWave has declined to join us. We reached out multiple times to the company to join the conversation. They declined our initial offer and did not respond to our subsequent invitations to join us or to provide, even to provide a statement. So we regret that, but we will charge ahead. I'm led to believe that they haven't been at the table for a while. Am I right, Mary Elaine?
That's correct.
Now, last December, you told the Lansing City Pulse that relations between the neighborhood and NioWave were at an all-time low. Those were your words. Has anything changed since then?
Nothing.
Okay. Now, you submitted a list of things that you wanted addressed related to the appearance of this pole barn. Remove all chain-link fencing around the property. Remove signs on the building and property. Eliminate the need for on-street employee parking. Plant mature trees on the site. And the list goes on. There's a number of things. Given the lack of response from NioWave, is your group considering settling for less, or are you as insistent as ever about getting all of these improvements?
We are as insistent as ever. To have all of those improvements and to have something done differently with the facade.
Okay, and let's clarify here. NioWave did put an offer on the table. Let's talk about that offer. What did they offer to do once you made this an issue?
They engaged Bob Ford, who is a landscape architect, and Bob put together a lovely landscaping plan.
Okay.
And it for what it was a lovely plan, but we were kind of being forced to just agree to it with no guarantees, with no accountability. And when I took it back to the neighbors over Thanksgiving in November, they just, you know, they said the trees are bare. Even if we have mature trees, we're still going to have to look at the ugly building, and it's still impinging on the neighborhood. So that's when I went back to NioWave and said, I'm sorry, that's not enough.
So you're sticking with the seven or so, it's about seven asks, as you refer to them here, to try to get some relief here. And to be clear, is the neighborhood generally of one opinion about this?
The one opinion that is generally clear is that we do not want that building. We do not like having that building in the neighborhood, its impact on our property values and quality of life.
And it is a
14,000 square foot
pole barn.
Okay. My 100-year-old three-story house could fit inside.
Okay. Is anything scheduled, really, right now? I know the City Council Planning and Development Committee meets tomorrow. Is anything scheduled? You're scheduled to address this tomorrow, correct, Brian?
We are. I mean, we've been talking about this issue since the mid part of last year. The first time that we found out about this in terms of it, council, was that we received a request from NioWave for a personal property exemption. They are in that building going to house about $5 million worth of equipment. And so they were looking for a tax abatement, personal property tax abatement, to the tune of about $230,000, $250,000. It was at that point that we were made aware that that building actually went up I think if anyone goes over and looks at it, they're going to be saying, you know, what were they thinking? And it's not just Niowave that we should be talking about. We should go back a couple of years. How we got here was initially when Niowave came in to that neighborhood to create their business. They bought the Walnut Street School from the Lansing School District, and we worked with them, the city did, as well as the neighborhood, with incentives to get that business up and going. And it's been very successful, and they've been very good corporate citizens in that neighborhood in terms of not only the jobs that they brought, but they also invested in the neighborhood in terms of purchasing, I think, around 20 homes and refurbishing them, renting them, and housing them, putting some homeowner occupants.
I remember that. And they want to expand into manufacturing, as I understand it,
too. That's correct. I mean, it's a very successful business, and it was going great for a number of years. And in order for that to happen, we as a city had to pass a special land use permit. It's a permit that allows them to put uses on that property that normally don't fit under the current zoning. And there are very specific conditions that have to be met in order for that to happen. For example, the use cannot change the essential character of the surrounding neighborhood, and it has to be keeping with the natural environment of the lot, and it has to protect and preserve the residential neighborhood and not have negative impact on the quality of life for the residents. Doesn't meet any of those conditions. And so the initial concern that the council had was, hey, wait a minute, how did we get here in the first place? Because a number of us were challenging the idea that this did in fact meet those conditions and that the city went ahead and issued the building permit and allowed it to move forward. So there is some concern there. We are looking at that as part of a number of things that we're looking at. So as we move forward, how can we prevent this from happening again? And we're looking at ordinance changes to make sure that these issues would actually come back before council, actually have public hearings and a vote, so things like this can't happen again. We're looking at the personal property exemption that was requested. In fact, Niowave took that off the table for a while, and we directed Niowave to sit down with the neighborhood and to please work out a resolution, and that's what's been ongoing. It's, I think, clear to us at this point on council that those negotiations are about as far as they can go. So we're going to be taking up the personal property exemption. We're going to be taking up the ordinance change. We want to start working and pushing that forward. It looks like, because of the scheduling and everything that's involved, that will all probably come to an head near the end of March. We want to get this done before our budget begins. The other piece that we're looking at, and this was brought to us by the neighborhood, is that they want us, through our city attorney's office, to do a very clear review of the SLU as it applies to this new building. We have in the SLU permit a clawback provision that says if the conditions are not met, we can take the SLU back, and there are some changes and things that we can do there as well. So those are all the things that we have on our plate at this time that we're going to be dealing with tomorrow and start the process forward to come.
That's a lot on your plate.
It is.
Did a city department drop the ball here?
Well, the city department had to make a review and make it determined that, in fact, it did meet all the conditions. And as a result of that, they went ahead and issued the building permit. In my opinion, I think they did drop the ball. And I think the city, in that regard, bears some responsibility in terms of the resolution of this issue. You have Niowave stepping up with $100,000 for some landscaping. It's now up to, I think, city council to take a look. What is the responsibility of the city here? Look, Mark, you know, we sit here and say and give a lot of lip service to neighborhoods and how we support neighborhoods, and we're putting some really serious economic development issues within these neighborhoods, and we want to support economic development. So we have a responsibility that when we do that, we're not going to create a situation that we have here where it is clear, there is no doubt in my mind, that property values have been negatively affected, that quality of life of the people that live around this have been negatively affected. And that's done in part by decisions that the city made that, in my view, again, I'm just one council member, that I don't think met the requirements and the conditions of the SLU. So I think we do bear some responsibility on that, and we're going to be talking about that in committee as well.
Is it clear to you where this bureaucratic breakdown likely took place?
Well, I don't know if it's a breakdown. The process, I mean, you know, we can sit here and beat up Niowave, but Niowave did what any business would do. They put a business plan together. They brought it to the city. They said, this is our budget. This is what we want to do. The city was the backstop. The city was the safety net. They reviewed it. They made the approvals. They gave the building permit, and Niowave went ahead and built it. And
did something get rubber stamped that shouldn't have been rubber stamped?
No, I think it was reviewed. I just think the wrong decisions were made.
Okay. Will you decide tomorrow the outcome of the personal property exemption? Will that be determined as early as tomorrow?
No, we will. What will have to happen is we're going to have to set this for a public hearing, which I think will occur on or about the end of February. And then once the public hearing occurs, it'll be referred back to committee, and then a final decision will be made at that time.
I'd like to get, Mary Elaine, you've already weighed in on this, but in your opinion, Brian, is Niowave's lack of participation an effort to wear the group down and eliminate some items from their ask list?
Well, I think it's been disappointing in terms of their presence at these meetings. I mean, there's a way that these things can get worked out. I appreciate at least the effort and the expenditure. $100,000 is $100,000, but it's not going as far as I would like to see in terms of remedying the issue. I would like to see them, though, at these meetings. They do send representatives. Sometimes they don't appear at all. And it's been, I think, somewhat problematic in terms of trying to get this issue resolved.
Let's be clear here. Are you saying that the landscaping plan that they put on the table would have cost the company $100,000?
That's what is being proposed at this time.
What's the total cost of your list of asks, Mary Elaine? Has that been calculated?
I know when some of it is simply tearing up a fence, tearing down a sign, so minimal expense.
Well, planting the, mature trees,
right.
There's got to be a cost to that.
Right, and that's when we met with them and they presented the plan, they had said to us in that meeting that it could run anywhere from $100,000 to $300,000, roughly the equivalent of their tax abatement request is what we were told, some of their guesstimates. But it also wasn't clear to us with the accountability issues whether they were going to continue to work with Bob Ford for the implementation of the project or if they were going to kind of outsource it to Home Depot.
Well, I think, you know, the concern that we keep hearing, and Mary Elaine has been in the forefront on this, is that, you know, it's not just the landscaping. The facade of this building, what should have happened was when you look at the SLU and the conditions that were required, any building on that property should have matched the same architecture of the school that's there, that's brick and mortar. And I think the major discussions that we've had is how do we change the facade on that building? And that's where the costs really come in. And, I mean, there's a couple hundred thousand that have been kicked around. And so I think that's, you know, what we've been hearing a lot from the neighborhood is how can this become somewhat invisible in the sense of matching up with what is currently there.
In your role as chairman of the Planning and Development Committee, Brian Jeffries, have you had any contact with the company that you could share with us here? Are you getting any signals, any signs from them?
Oh, sure. I've had a number of meetings with them. We've talked through a lot of things. I've expressed my opinions to them, the same that I've said here today. I've encouraged them to attend these meetings, you know, and I've met also with the neighborhood on a number of times as well, trying to, you know, get this thing, get the parties together and work it out. I mean, really what should have happened on this, Mark, and what the frustrating thing about this is, particularly as a council member, is council's been handed a hot potato here that, you know, had the process worked, had we had the neighborhood in before the permits were issued, had this discussion occurred before the building was built, I think we could have worked out something that would have been accommodating to both parties and we wouldn't be in the position we are here today. And that's the intent and the purpose behind the ordinance that we're proposing, the ordinance changes, that so that in the future We're not going to have this. So we're going to force that conversation to occur before any build-out occurs on any of these other projects that are located in the city of Lansing. It's unusual. This project, I've been on council since in 12 years, and this is the first time I've seen anything like this. It's a very rare occurrence, but we certainly cannot afford to have this happen again in the city.
How do you expect the public hearings to go? Do you expect, just a landslide of support for the neighborhood here, or will it be more complicated than that?
That's what's been consistent so far. I mean, we've had, this issue is not something that we had it 6 months ago and it's disappeared. I mean, we've had folks down almost every Monday night when we meet as a city council to come and just speak on the issue, even though it's not even on the agenda. So this is an issue that resonates not only in the community, and Mark, I think what's important is that, you know, this issue, unlike any other issue that I've seen, has resonated throughout the city. We have received letters of support from the East Side Neighborhood Organization, which is located on the east side of the neighborhood, or east side of the city, from Old Everett down in southeast part of the city, Colonial Village. All the neighborhoods are worried about this and concerned about this because they don't want it happening in their neighborhood. So Right. We have to respond to it.
We've got less than a minute to go. Carol Wood announced on Current State last week she will not be running for mayor. Any response to that? Disappointed or?
Well, I talked to Carol, and I knew she was leaning that way. I mean, she, as president, and now she's chair of the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission, has a lot on her table or on her plate, and I think really wants to commit the time to do that, and I can understand her decision.
You're not running? You are running?
What is this? I mean, you keep pulling this out of people. I've given it a lot of thought, and I've had a lot of people push me in that direction. But at this time, I'm going to stick with city council. I'm up this year, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Thanks very much for joining us. City Councilman Brian Jeffries, Mary Elaine Keener of the Fix the Facade Group in the Walnut neighborhood in Lansing. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.